Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where we strive to be both open-hearted and open-minded. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, your gender, or your family structure. You are welcome here. The opening words are by Ann Pert. We come together to celebrate who we are, to share the insights that give meaning and hope to our lives, to learn from the wisdom of others that these truths may contribute to our understanding. We gather, we share, we learn, we celebrate our coming together. Patty, would you light the chalice? May unity and peace abide within us. May wholeness and joy touch our hearts. May kindness and compassion fill our universe and reverence fill our days. May we see the light that shines in all. The reading that I would like to share with you today is written by Alicia Ford, a Unitarian Universalist. When we pause to remember who we are, companions on this grand experiment called life, when we take a moment to shed the ways we have been carefully taught to lead from fear, to punish the poor, to persecute those who don't look like we do, to deny rights to those who love, to believe that we are separate, that some people are superior to others. When we take a moment to shed all of that and hear our stories, hear and see each other into existence, into community, when we take a moment to embrace, to practice a different way of being, when we answer the call of love, then we are living into the promise of building the world we dream about. It is beautiful to dream, to cast a vision, to stretch our minds into the future and imagine what may be if we were to build a new way of being. Not someday, but beginning again today. Beginning again every day that we have breath, taking courage with these hands and these hearts to make real the dream of a more equitable world, to journey together, seeking to be transformed, even as we transform. Becoming explorers and learners in this world around us, humbled by what we do not yet know. Fulfilling the promise of healing a fragmented world, laboring not just in hope, but also in love. In this spirit, we commit. In this spirit, we gather. In this spirit, we pray. First, I have to come clean and confess, not only to being late, but I confess that I am guilty of false advertising. In the August Prairie Fire newsletter, I wrote this about today's service: to spark our imagination on what forms daily resistance might take, we will take a brief look at the lives of Jefferson, Emerson, Phineas Quimby, Andrew Jackson Davis, and Helena Blavatsky, Paul Tillich, Alan Watson, Mary Daly, among others. What was I thinking? Perhaps that I was going to be leading a weekend-long workshop rather than speaking to you for a few minutes. We don't have time to look at all those people this morning. 2 weeks ago, or the last time I was up here, I mentioned Paul Tillich and quoted a brief passage that he had written about atheism. And you already know, I think, most of you at least, a fair amount about both Jefferson and Emerson. So we could cross those three people off of my hypothetical list. But then I added another one, William James. There is no way that I can do him justice in one Sunday program, even if the entire program were devoted to him. But when researching the lives of the aforementioned people, I encountered a section in Robert Fuller's outstanding book, Religious Revolutionaries. I came across a section about James, for whom I have great admiration, and yet about whom I know very little. The section seemed particularly relevant to what I have to say today. Robert Fuller writes, God to him, to James, to William James, must be understood pantheistically. It's a word you don't say much or hear much. Pantheistically as a power or directional urge pushing the universe toward greater wholeness and completion. This requires a firm belief in the melioristic character of our universe. Say what? Fuller and James lost me here. Meliorism? It's a word I've never encountered. At least not that I remember. Anybody know that word?
No.
Bill? Well, Robert Fuller in his book defines it this way. Meliorism is the principle that the world is capable of improvement, progress, belief in the possibility, but not the inevitability, of improvement was to James the cornerstone of a vital spirituality. And this from Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, 10th edition. Meliorism, the belief that the world tends to become better and that humans can aid its betterment. The origin of that word goes back to probably 1877. And as far as I could tell, it was English, is English. Doesn't have, you know, a Latin root or anything. Well, it does, but the dictionary doesn't credit anything except, I think the point was that it's came out of the Enlightenment, probably.
What about a million?
Well, that's another subject. They're not related. Fuller defines, Meliorism, William James wrote, treats salvation. I'm using the word salvation, as I think James was also, as in salvaging or saving the world. Meliorism treats salvation as neither necessary nor impossible. It treats it as a possibility which becomes more and more of a probability the more numerous the actual conditions of salvation become. Okay, we're going to unpack that just a little. But James believed that only humans, have responsibility for seeing that these actual conditions of wholeness and unifications are brought into concrete existence. And here's the big difference between those who insist that the world must and shall be saved and those who are concerned with believing that the world may be saved. For me, those statements make William James not only a pantheist, but perhaps the ultimate humanist. So, that phrase, the more numerous the actual conditions of salvation become. What exactly does that mean? How do we create actual conditions of salvation? That is, what does it mean right now? Because it's not worth anything if it doesn't mean something right now to us on the 13th day of August in the year, what year are we in? 2017. Here's what that phrase means to me. That we create actual conditions of salvation, salvaging, saving the world, by many ways, but I'm just going to give you a few of my sort of favorites. Changing the narrative, expanding consciousness, recognizing the role of fear in our culture today, resisting the status quo, which in our case, at our point in time, means resisting the Trump administration, and by stepping as far as possible out of the boxes that we have all been put into. That's why I was trying to acquaint you with these folks whom Robert Fuller calls religious revolutionaries. 2 weeks ago, if you were here, you know, I focused on Anne Hutchinson and Paul Tillich from very many centuries apart. All of those people whom Fuller refers to as religious revolutionaries, on some level, did at least one of those things that I just said, you know, that changed the narrative, expanded consciousness. They all did that. They are role models for us. They help us better clarify our own beliefs. They can give us the tools to speak and to understand the language of people from other faith traditions, which in turn can enable us to work with a whole array of others to change the world. People this morning I'm calling resistors. And it doesn't matter how many Unitarian Universalists it takes to change the world if we aren't working with these other people, people of other faith traditions, yes, but also those folks who don't go to church. The revolutionaries in Robert Fuller's book were people who refused to be put into boxes, people who wanted to explore other ways of being in the world, and yes, other ways of being religious. Many of them lived in a time when everybody went to church. I don't introduce you to them because those people might be trying to advance any particular religious denomination or theology. Quite the contrary. These religious revolutionaries, most of them weren't particularly interested in organized religion, with a rather major exception of Joseph Smith, who's in that book. These were people who asked the important questions in life. What really matters? How can I live my life the way I should live my life as a good person without, does it matter what the afterlife might bring? Or do I have to worry about salvation? Or how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? Or anything like that. What can I do to save the world? Material possessions are most important, or the sacredness of life? What ultimately concerns me? So we seek out those people from the past who have resisted the dominant culture. Did you know that although Thomas Jefferson, to use Fuller's words, was widely admired as a political revolutionary, probably all know that, he was simultaneously reviled for his daring religious views. He was labeled a French infidel and atheist, although I'm not sure why being a French infidel and atheist is any worse than being, an Italian one. Many of the clergy of Jefferson's time believed that if he became president, he would overthrow all churches and have every Bible in the country destroyed. All this because he had faith that reason was the greatest gift that God had imparted into creation. Loyalty to reason was humanity's most important religious obligation. We can draw on the beliefs of people like Phineas Quimby, who said he thought there was too much emphasis on sin. He lived in the 1800s. He believed that there was a connection between the mind and the body, and if the mind was out of sorts or unsettled or not at peace, then there could be physical consequences. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of Phineas Quimby. He called his work Science of Health. Sometimes he called it Science of Life. And sometimes he called it Christian Science. We don't credit him with the beginnings of it, but he and a couple of others were. One of Quimby's patients became a student of his and then a disciple, and you may have heard of her.
Yeah.
History majors should be quiet. Yes, okay. Because they give away the punchline. And you know I say that as a fellow history major. Yes, Mary Baker Eddy. Quimby's take on God was similar to the transcendentalist belief that God was an impersonal spirit pervading the universe. Quimby also shared the transcendentalist's opinion about Jesus, that he was the great example, not the great exception, the great example of humanity's potentials. And Quimby often referred to God as wisdom, with a capital W. These are his words, an invisible wisdom which fills all space and whose attributes are all life, all wisdom, all goodness, and love. Well, referring to God as wisdom, capital W, is as meaningful to me as using the word love, capital L, to refer to God. I believe in love. I believe in wisdom. So this part of Quimby's theology resonates with me, speaks to something deep that I agree with. Expanding consciousness, resisting the status quo, stepping outside the box, traits shared by both resistors and revolutionaries. Resistors are us, living right now, full of angst and anxiety about the state of the world we find ourselves in. Just a caveat in case this is being filmed by who knows. When I mention the current president, I've said this before, but people still ask me this, the current president of this country, I'm not doing so in a partisan or political way. I'm attempting to speak truth to power. I'm encouraging all of us to do everything that we possibly can as individuals and as a community of faith to resist the policies of this administration. We are way beyond worrying about political parties here. I believe that we are talking about the soul of this country, the soul of this country, about the end of an amazing experiment in history. We are watching an assault on so many fronts, an assault on human progress, on the expansion of consciousness, on marginalized people who were already under assault, on the planet, on common sense. The list seems endless. What is happening is evil. Resist. Resist. At every opportunity, resist by reading about Black lives, for example. Read about the horrific, absolutely unacceptable prison system. Go to training seminars and workshops that expand your consciousness and help you confront your fears and prepare you to do actual actions in the world. Resist by doing those actual actions and good works that you're already doing. I know many of you are already doing them. But they can't stand on their own without introspection and reflection and meditation and perhaps prayer. They go hand in hand with action. Resist what the purveyors of fear want you to believe about the other, anyone who is not like you. Change the narrative. Encourage those who are not part of the dominant culture to tell the story from their perspective, like the wolf. Most of us have only heard the pig's version of what happened on that fateful day when two of their houses were destroyed. Resist. Think again about whether or not we are white supremacists. Not of the sort that wear hoods and burn crosses. No, not that kind of white supremacists. But like everything else, white supremacy is a spectrum. And we might not put on hoods and burn crosses, but most of us are somewhere between the middle and the other end of the spectrum, going about our lives and doing our good deeds, assuming that people of color want to be just like us. Because everyone wants to be white, right? And how could we not be white supremacists? We live in it. We live in the sea of white supremacy. Resist, 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 resist. I saw a bumper sticker the other day that had one word on it. Resist. Didn't say what to resist. It didn't have to. Sometimes we're not even aware when we're committing an act of resistance. I've told you before, this has been a year ago, when I was coming back from Transylvania last summer, that a young man from Libya was seated beside me. It's a lot of hours between Rome and Chicago. And he was so excited. He was coming to this country. He'd gotten his visa. He couldn't have been more than 20, 21. And he talked almost all night. But that was okay. And his English wasn't real good, but it was good enough. He wanted to know. He wanted to know so much about this country. I think I committed a little act of resistance here. And he certainly was committing one. Sometimes we are the recipients of an act of resistance, of an act of not believing what the dominant culture tells us to. When I was in New Orleans, six weeks ago for General Assembly, first thing I realized when I got there and unpacked was I didn't have the phone charger. And I could live without a phone. But I thought, I'll just see where the nearest Radio Shack or whatever is. Turned out it was within walking distance. So off I went, talked to that very nice person working there who happened to be black, young black man. And we chatted and blah, 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 and he gave me something for free. And then off I went. And along my route, I always talk, almost always talk to the homeless people. And I was talking to homeless people, and then I was talking to a policeman. And all of a sudden I hear somebody saying, "Ma'am, ma'am." It was that young man from Radio Shack. "You forgot your phone." Eventually, I would have realized probably where the phone was. He had chased me. He said, "You sure move fast. I'm glad that you stopped to talk to these people." And I said, "Well, I'm giving you a tip." He said, "No, we don't do tips." I said, "Yeah, I'm giving you a tip, but all I have is a 20. I'm not giving you 20. So we walked down the street to a drugstore and got, change. He wasn't, whatever he felt about whites was, he was being a resistor to that. And sometimes resisting can be on the wrong way, if that makes sense. A friend of mine, I guess I'm saying sometimes an act of resistance can be reactionary, of course. It can be an act of hate rather than resistance to an oppression. I have a good friend who lives in, doesn't matter where she lives, but she happens to live in Las Vegas. And she's a nice person, but she hasn't gotten along real well with a particular neighbor. This past winter, that neighbor started dumping garbage in my friend's driveway in the middle of the night. And first it was just boxes and things, but then eventually it was garbage. And then that person watched from across the street while my friend and her partner cleaned up the mess. I tell you this story because I think the garbage spreader felt empowered enough to do this, given the general atmosphere of hate that seems to be breaking out everywhere in this country. It's okay now. There's an accepted license to bully, to express contempt, to be unkind and cruel, to be mean, because meanness and bullying are, I don't know what. And what's going on in Virginia right now? In my litany of resists, I was going to say resist fear. But I'm not sure it's possible to resist fear. And also, I don't think that's the best route to take with fear. What is possible where fear is concerned, because there are a lot of things to be afraid of, What is possible is to recognize it, talk about it, take a deep breath, and proceed with your fearfulness as best you can. What is possible where fear is present is to learn how to realize when fear is being used by the government, or by anyone for that matter, to manipulate us and to keep us in our places, or worst of all, to perpetuate stereotypes and assumptions about groups of people, for example, the homeless. And that is precisely why workshops and training sessions and seminars and taking time for reflection and meditation are important. A couple of nights ago, I had my, what I call my fear dream. It used to be a recurring dream of mine, but I hadn't had it for years. In the dream, I am in Cleveland, where I lived in real life for a while, in an unsafe neighborhood. When I lived in Cleveland in real life, I lived in what is now an unsafe neighborhood, but it wasn't that. But when I lived there in real life, it was during the Huff riots, which, unless you're really familiar with Cleveland, you won't. But they were akin to the Watts riots. There's more going on in this dream, though, than fear of walking through a bad neighborhood, which I always do in the dream. I should say I always get to my destination safely, though. But there are other fears in the dream, which I didn't realize until I had the dream a couple nights ago, deeper ones. Fear for my ultimate safety and for that of my children's and grandchildren's safety, and the fear that we humans have really messed things up. But remember, so far, in the dream, I have always reached my destination safely. I like to think or believe that love can lead me, not past, but through these kinds of fear. I am certain that hate cannot do that. I want to be free of white supremacy, but I never will be totally. I want my children and grandchildren to be safe, but I know they never will be totally. Sometimes I would like to create a bubble to keep us all safe, but that won't happen either. And then there is PTSS, post-Trump stress syndrome, which, you know, we chuckle about, but a few weeks ago, Rachel Long, a psychiatrist who's a member of this congregation, said she sees it in her patients, and I have a good friend who's a marriage counselor. She's seeing it, so we're seeing it. Someone told me recently, it was good feedback to get, it was constructive criticism, that since the November election, my reflections occasionally left them down in the dumps. I'm not apologizing for that, because sometimes trying to be honest and speak truth to power or describe things as close to reality as we can, we're going to end up down in the dumps. But I know also that I personally have been and am struggling with PTSS. The good news is this. We don't have to be stuck there. We don't have to stay down in the dumps in the negative space, not when we know that we can resist. There's so much to be done, and we humans created it all. We can fix it all. Yes, I am a humanist, as you know. In the interest of not leaving you despondent or gloomy or discouraged, today, here are some examples of current resistors. And Orange, I think you can really relate to one of these. I have mentioned the magazine Yes before. Yes, and then before. These Yes, that's part of its title. Subscribe. There's an act of resistance. So these stories come from an article titled Six Ways, Compassionate Defiance, from the summer, this summer, 2017, issue of Yes. I'm not going to go into detail about all of them, but I think if I give you their titles, you'll get it. Fostering Syrian Refugee Children. This is about a couple in Seattle. Next one is MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Curators send a message to Trump. Some of you may know this. In February, MoMA took out pre-1950 Western-themed artworks and put in contemporary work done by artists from the Muslim countries affected by Trump's proposed ban. Going door to door in support of Muslims in Oakland, California. Many of the people going door to door were Jewish, and the point was to get homeowners and businesses to put signs in their windows, "We stand with our Muslim, Arab, and immigrant neighbors." I believe that I saw such a sign in Orange Street and other businesses on Monroe Street.
I printed them for everyone.
Thank you. Orange printed them for everyone. And many people seem to have put, many businesses have them up, which makes me teary-eyed, but a great act of resistance. You may know this one, that the I don't remember the figure, but I want to say thousands of tech industry workers, not the big bosses, but the tech industry workers have signed a petition to oppose data collection, referencing Nazi Germany for one, and our incarceration of Japanese in World War II for another. there's a buddy system that some cities are using for court hearings for immigrants or for people who are about to be deported. These are wonderful examples of resistance from different parts of the country. Well, what about right here in Madison, of course? Go to meetings as you are willing and able to do so. Moses, of course, to which we belong. Moses, for those of you who might not know, is a grassroots organization working on prison reform. It's a short version. If you want to go into more detail, you can talk to me. And then on the immediate level, I got an email yesterday from a group called Freedom Inc. I suggest we all try to call or email or write Madison Police Chief Mike Koval. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but express our dismay about his plan to, let's see if I can quote here from, initiate a wave of arrests that will predominantly target African-American men. Okay, I'm scared of the amount of gun violence that's going on in Madison that wasn't here before. Yesterday in the middle of the day, sunny, beautiful day, someone spray painted my car. At least I think it's spray paint. Anybody know anything about spray paint? I'd appreciate it if you'd look at my car. Can't see real well out of one window now. So I'm scared, but I don't think a wave of arrests that would predominantly target African-American men is the way to go. I don't know what the way, you know. I do. I know many ways to go. And then there was, how many of you know about this? It grew into an arrest of a black homeless man on South Park Street. There was a ground, but it wasn't grounds for arrest. Okay, enough about that. At the top of your order of service, the quote says, "We will not change the world if we're not willing to do uncomfortable things." Some of you will recognize the author, well, the name, Brian Stevenson, who wrote Just Mercies. One of the books you might consider reading when you are working on that studying and introspective part of dismantling the dominant culture. We will not change the world if we're not willing to do uncomfortable things. Well, here's the word that came into my mind: lockers. We can do this. We can certainly do it on a trial basis. If you want more information, talk to me or to anybody on social action or to Gary. How strong are we? How courageous, and remember, courage does not mean lack of fear. Are we having lockers, three tiny lockers for the homeless on our property? We can do this. Daily acts of resistance are important. Daily acts of resistance are actually all around us. Revolt, resist, rejoice. I titled my July 30th reflections. I have a trinity going on here. Maybe trilogy would be better. But I prefer thinking of three levels of a house, with revolt at one level and resistance at another level, with rejoicing the staircase that connects them and energizes us so that we don't give up, even when we most want to. In 2 weeks, I'll focus on the rejoice part, and we'll celebrate our Unitarian Universalist tradition so we will not always be down in the dumps. Closing words were written by Jean Olson, titled Go Boldly. May you be brave enough to expose your aching woundedness and reveal your vulnerability. May you speak your deepest truths, knowing that they will change as you do. May you sing the music within you, composing your own melody, playing your song with all your heart. May you draw, paint, sculpt, and sew, showing the world your vision. May you write letters, poetry, biography, slogans, graffiti, the great novel. laying bare your words to love and hate. May you love even though your heart breaks again and again. And until the end of your days, may your life be filled with possibilities and courage. May it be so. Go in peace, greet your neighbor, buy bread, and bake goods. It's that Sunday. Oh, and there's a humanist meeting too in the annex, I think.